Support for Prairie Public is provided by the Bush Foundation, investing in great ideas and the people who power them. In Minnesota, North Dakota, South Dakota, and the 23 Native nations that share that same geography. Learn more at bushfoundation.org.
This is Main Street on Prairie Public. I'm Ashley Thornburg, and it is our spring member drive, and you can support the programming that you rely on in a couple of easy ways. One, you can call or text the word donate to 1-800-359-4145, or you can click and join at prairiepublic.org. It just takes a couple of minutes, but it makes a huge difference. It makes everything that you hear on Prairie Public possible. All of it comes from member support. 800-359-4145, or click and join at prairiepublic.org. And anyone who contributes during Main Street today is going to be entered in a special drawing for the book Awareness, Whispers from Nature. This is a beautiful new book from poet and photographer and North Dakota native Kent Burkhardsmeyer, who joins me now. Kent, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you, Ashley. It's a pleasure to be on Main Street again.
I just love this title already, Awareness, Whispers from Nature. What does nature most often want to whisper to Kent Burkhardsmeyer?
What a great question. I find that the whispers for me from nature help me to gain presence and clarity, and help me just kind of appreciate the presence of nature and being in nature. I think growing up in North Dakota, that was something I thrived with, especially the openness of nature. And so when I take the time and sit in nature, particularly as I'm doing photography, then it's sort of telling me a story and connecting me to what's surrounding me. And probably, especially during the pandemic, it was helping me address anxieties I was facing and encountering. So, but I'm looking forward to post-pandemic and the whispers of nature there.
What do you mean, help you address anxieties?
Well, in the early days last year, the uncertainty of the duration of the effect and everything around it and being locked down just kind of overwhelmed in a way. And I wasn't able to get out and do photography. I had several trips planned that were canceled.
Yeah.
And so I was able to pull up my old images and just sort of sit with them, meditate, pray with the pictures, and just words came out. And so it was helping me understand the feelings I was having. I would just pierce into the imagery and into the nature and just step back into those moments and that place. And so words just started coming that were helping and comforting for me. So I started jotting those down and in a poetry format, and it just worked really well for me, and I've been continuing, not at the pace I was early on, but I've been continuing.
So as those words were flowing out of you and into poems, were they coming out sort of fully formed, or did they need a lot of fleshing out?
I think probably as I mature more in this format of poetry, since I had never done anything like this before, I think now looking back, they gave me the framework. And as I started editing the book and putting them down and sequencing them, I started, doing some little bit of wordsmithing and further thought into the moment and what was transpiring for me to add clarity for both myself and for readers.
Awareness, Whispers from Nature is the second book in your collection, and the first one is Stillness, Whispers from Nature. And this book starts with, Awareness, Whispers from Nature leads me to stillness. Stillness, Whispers from Nature opens me to awareness. It's like the most beautiful, which came first, the chicken or the egg?
And that's how I felt as well. It's more circular in a way. And I think there's, you know, other stopping points along the journey in life and then the journey in nature, et cetera. And so for me, first step, and this was clearer in the pandemic, first step was just being still, just stopping still, not because we needed to or had to, but because it was important for me to just stand still and be present. And then through that, it eventually stories came to me, the whispers, there's awareness. So I thought it is very circular. And as I'm become more aware, I'm more still and enjoying the presence of nature.
Well, let's hear your poem, Awareness.
Okay. Awareness. Surrounded in fuzziness, like marine layer engulfing coastal shores, centering on nature silences all the blaring confusion. Reason cuts through chaos, like the sun beaming holes in clouds, opening my eyes to clearly see. Clarity of heart and mind interlace as one, like the sprouting tree and rock, nurturing my roots to firmly ground. Fostered with kindness, like an exuberant sapling thriving in a craggy cliff, encountering awareness during moments of stillness.
That was poet and photographer Kent Burkhardstmeyer. His newest book is Awareness, Whispers from Nature. Kent, the line that really sticks out to me in that one is opening my eyes to clearly see. I would categorize myself as like a level 0.5 meditator. But it's so, it always catches me off guard when I have heard something over and over and over. I've even said the same thing time and again. And then all of the sudden, one day in a kind of meditation, whether it's that classic cross-legged seated or if it's a movement meditation like hiking or yoga or guitar playing, not that I can do that, but where all of the sudden what I'd been hearing and what I'd been saying actually made sense to me.
Yes.
Is that how that goes for you?
It is. There's often things, well, as a photographer, there's one thing we kind of learn is sometimes you need to turn around and see what's behind you, and you might find beauty more extravagant or unique or touching than what you were initially focusing on. And I think this line to me is the same thing. It's just opening my eyes so I can clearly see, and it's being out as a landscape photographer and not getting too hung up on the mechanics of getting the photograph, but being present and seeing what's really there and what is the story? What are these whispers? That's the only way I can really describe it. What's talking to me?
What is your process for photography?
It's pretty much going out into areas that I would like to explore, have never been to, or places that I once was visited and didn't really maybe appreciate. So an example of that would be when I go back to North Dakota, there are so many memories there, and all of a sudden it comes up time that I have had, whether it's out at Theodore Roosevelt National Park, or I grew up in Bismarck for the most part, or going down along the Missouri River. And so my process is then to just look around and see and sort of focus on maybe the ordinary, nothing trophy shot type of a focus, but what's really kind of the ordinary that that I may have overlooked in the past or is all of a sudden catching my eye. And so I'll take the pictures. I will probably sit on them for a while, and then I'll go back through them and kind of catalog them and bring them in, and then do a little bit of clearing some things up and typical small type processing, and then decide if I want to print it. And if I print it, I'll do a test case and then see what it looks like on paper, because I feel that's the mm-hmm. best way to really appreciate photography, particularly photographic art.
Yeah. I always am curious about people. Certainly you would have grown up shooting on film, you know, maybe 24, 36 exposures on a roll. And then now we have iPhones that can take, I don't even know how many images in a second, and they can blur the background for you, and they can enhance, and they can do all of these things. So I'm just curious, are you embracing that? Are you a little bit nervous of just how seemingly easier it is?
Well, I think it's a good thing that many people have always taken pictures. I mean, I remember growing up and we had the little Instamatics and mom and dad and everybody's taking pictures and that, and then we'd send them off and get the pictures back 2 weeks or whatever and look through them. So I think we're a generation or society that always likes to take pictures. So that part of it, I did grow up doing film, and but I really started with photography in the digital age. And I'm actually going back and doing more film. I have several older film cameras that I bring with me.
Wow.
And that the reason I do that is it slows me down. It's so easy to just, as you're said with the iPhone, just take a ton of photos, or even on a digital SLR camera, it can go through 200 in a day or something like that. Mm-hmm. And then you have to sort through them and look through them and everything. And with film, you're a lot more cognizant of the role and how many shots you have. So you take your time and position and just really kind of wait for that moment or evaluate it. And then you go and send it off. And I don't develop my own, so I send it off and it comes back several weeks later and you have that thrill again about, oh gosh, oh yeah, I remember that now. That's wonderful. You know, the sad part is you might learn that you didn't quite nail it as you wanted, mm-hmm. but you know, that's part of life.
Right. Well, it sounds like you are doing that to find that stillness and awareness and get that to come through in your images. How do you tackle this process of deciding what images to include?
I will take that in two parts. One is in including in the book, one piece, and the other part is just including as I move forward in which pictures to sell or make available or print. It really goes back to how I react to the image and the memories that were invoked or in the presence, and do I get brought back into that space and place? Then they're the ones that I will really treasure. For the book part of it, it was sort of aligning what just talked to me and how the poems came out, and was there for this book, correlating it and calling it together was really about a sequence of flow as well as a symmetry of the poems, as well as the image. It was a tougher challenge than I thought it would be.
You have images in the book from all over the U.S., North Dakota, Colorado, Maine, Florida. You have images from Peru and from China, and just you have traveled all over. One thing that really strikes me, at least the images that stick out the most to me, and that's hard to narrow down in a book with this many really striking images, but the ones that have a little extra layer of a snow or a fog or lots of clouds in them, I don't know. For me, I guess I'm just drawn to the images where you have to work just a little bit harder to see really what is in that image. Am I reading too much into that that little layer of sort of a veiling that is in so many of these photos.
No, I think you nailed that really well. I would have said the word veil as well. There's a veil of mystery in the image. And I don't know where that came from. The ones that started it the most was living in London. And I'd been there
pretty
2.5 years. Yeah, well, I'd been there 2.5 years and hadn't seen any fog, any significant fog. And we were literally packing up our flat to move back to the United States. We were staying at like equivalent of Airbnb and going over to do the last loading and cleanup. And this thick layer of fog along the Thames showed up. And I just said to my wife, I said, okay, I got to take some pictures. We're going along the deal. We don't need to be there for 2 more hours or something. Ultimately, the fog lasted until almost 2 in the afternoon. And I stayed out shooting until 12:30. Wow. And one of those images from that day is in an awareness. It's called Passing Through. And it's a big tree in this common area that we lived by. We walked all the time and the fog is really thick in there. And you could just barely see this old man and dog sitting at a bench under the tree, and a runner comes running through as we're doing it. So I had several shots from that, and that day turned out to be phenomenal. So from then on, I just really was drawn into fog and these layers. So I think that was a reassuring moment of time for me to go down that avenue.
We're visiting with Kent Burkhardstmeyer, the poet and photographer behind the new book, Awareness Whispers from Nature. You can also find out more at his website, kjbimages.com. Kent, I saw on your website that you have joined forces with a wellness lifestyle expert, and there is this combination of your images and some actual sound meditations. Why did you want to do that project?
So Zoa is out of Boston area, and she has done some wellness. And I think what really drew me into it is I believe the strength of nature is a healing place for us, whether it's emotionally, physically, mentally, spiritually. And I thought it was appropriate to have alignment with someone who is more of an expert in that area, and we could link together imagery. She was asking me for some images for her blog on a monthly basis. And I thought, well, let's collaborate on some things. And we've done 2 now that have kind of worked out well. And I hope we can continue through the rest of the year where we'll do a few more pieces and draw in sort of a little bit more about how the wellness of nature. The line I like to use is bringing nature's wellness inside, bringing it inside us, inside our home, inside our space, inside that we can leverage and take advantage, not take advantage, but we can appreciate the wellness that's offered through nature.
Kent Burkhardstmeyer is the poet and photographer behind the book Awareness Whispers from Nature. It is the 2nd in a series. The first is called Stillness Whispers from Nature. You can find out more at kjbimages.com. Kent, thank you so much for your time today.
Thank you very much, Ashley. I really appreciate being on Main Street.
And as a reminder, you can get a copy of that book. One person will be drawn as the lucky winner for a copy of Awareness. That's open to anybody who makes a donation or gives us a call at 800-359-4145 or go online to prairiepublic.org. Of course, you don't have to make an investment to be entered in the drawing, but certainly we hope that you do. And this is for Main Street listeners only, so a special incentive during this Main Street time slot. 1-800-359-4145 or online at prairiepublic.org. So many great reasons to support Prairie Public. I think our director of radio, Bill Thomas, can let us know of a lot of great reasons to support and some ways to do it.
And when you call that number, you will talk to someone who will tell you about what information we need from you. It's not a lot. And you can sign up, decide how much you want to contribute. And a lot of people, we find this driver contributing at $5 a month.
It's a good, nice, round, easy number.
I just got contacted by a friend of mine who's already giving $10 a month. She said, well, I'm going to up it to $15 a month, so $5 more a month. So,
all right.
People give all kinds of different amounts. You decide. I mean, that's the amazing thing about this way of funding stuff. It's not like here's the subscription and you pay it and, you know, once in a while there's a discount or something. You get to decide how much you contribute depending on how important Prairie Public is to you and your own situation. So you can do that online. You can see the thank you gifts. If you do it now, you get entered in this drawing for this beautiful book.
Yeah. And Bill, we have had you on a couple of times recently to talk about Poetry Out Loud because you're one of the judges at that. You are a big poetry fan. You have been paging through this book. Just so you know, you can't be entered to win this drawing.
Yeah, I know.
You probably know that. But you found a poem that catches your ear.
Yeah, well, there were a lot in here. And of course, we can't tell you over the radio the way they beautifully match up with the photographs.
The photos are gorgeous.
Yeah, yeah. But this one is called And, Not Or. Sea and shore, deer drank. Rocks and pebbles, crab crawled. Fir and madrone, soil sustained. Sunlight and breeze, fog folded. Moss and dampness, freshness felt. Peace and quiet. Calmness centered. And, not or.
That's the kind of poem you almost don't even want to talk after.
Right.
But of course, that doesn't really work on radio. But there are so many poems, so many photos throughout this book that you really do, like you heard in the conversation with Kent, want to spend a lot of time with, deepen your awareness. And again, that book is called Awareness Whispers from Nature. And anyone who calls us during Main Street is entered to win a signed copy of this book. 1-800-359-4145. Or you can click and join at prairiepublic.org. Just poem after poem and beautiful landscape photos, lots of great trees and mountains and fog, and they all have that sort of ethereal, otherworldly quality to
them. And the poems go with the photos so well that they just magnify each other in a beautiful way. So really wonderful book, and if you make your contribution to Prairie Public during the Main Street hours, you are entered in the drawing to win it.
Still to come on Main Street, we are going to hear from another North Dakota native who loves words and spends much of her time writing. Deb Marquardt shares an essay. And another North Dakotan, this time he is a transplant. This is his adopted home. Historian Tom Ezern is going to share a Plains Folk essay. But now, it's time for the news.
For Prairie Public, I'm Danielle Webster. As the rate of COVID-19 vaccinations slows in Minnesota, state officials are looking to change the strategy. State Health Commissioner Jan Malcolm says the next vaccination phase will involve more small, targeted vaccine events.
We're definitely looking to ramp up those strategies in partnership with community organizations, with our healthcare providers, our local public health, to do much more of that, you know, kind of smaller scale, more distributed community vaccination.
Nearly 60% of eligible Minnesota residents have received at least one dose of the COVID-19 vaccine. A new 208.7-megawatt wind farm is being proposed in Bowman County. It's called Bowman Wind LLC, and it's between Bowman and Rame. Public Service Commission Chairman Julie Fedorchak.
It is a $420 million project, and it impacts 42,144 acres in southwest North Dakota. And interestingly, the study acres were 104,000 acres were studied to evaluate and develop this plan. So it's a pretty sizable impact.
A public hearing on that project will be held in Bowman June 24th. Fedorchak says over the past year, the number of applications for wind farms has slowed. She says that's more of a transmission issue.
The interconnection costs to the grid have become excessive. for the new projects because of the congestion. And so they're not as economic when they have to pay these high interconnection costs. So, yeah, you're definitely seeing fewer. And you're seeing a big push for more transmission development.
And MDU and Great Plains Natural Gas customers will see higher monthly bills because of the settlement of natural gas rate cases. The utilities were granted interim rates while the cases were pending. Public Service Commissioner Brian Crosius says for MDU, the settlement will add another 64 cents to the average homeowner's bill, bringing the total increase to $4.21 per month. For Great Plains customers in the city of Wahpeton, the extra increase is $2.85, bringing the total to $3.62 per month. Crosius says the reason for the rate case was to replace some aging natural gas pipelines.
And I view our job as regulators. Our role is to balance system safety and reliability with cost. We want to keep delivery of natural gas to the customers in North Dakota as low as possible, but at the same time ensuring that it arrives at each household in a safe and efficient manner.
The increases will take effect once the utilities file the paperwork. Great Plains is a subsidiary of MDU. For Prairie Public, I'm Danielle Webster.
You are informed. You know the news of the day, the why and how and what's next. And that's because you listen to NPR. Support the journalism you trust by donating to this station.
And you can do that by calling 1-800-359-4145. You can also text the word donate to that number or go online to prairiepublic.org. You get to decide the amount that works for you. Maybe it is $5 a month, maybe $10 a month. Maybe it's a handful of dimes. We are going to hear an essay about dimes right now, not necessarily in support of a public radio, but in building connection between two people. Deb Marquardt is from North Dakota, and she is now teaching at Iowa State in Ames and is Iowa's poet laureate. And today she is going to share just a very touching essay for us about the loss of her father called Dimes.
Since my father died, I've been finding dimes. On jogging trails, in corridors of hotels, several times at odd hours on the sidewalk leading to my office building at the university where I teach. I don't expect anyone to believe this. At last count, I've picked up 64 in the 9 years since my father's death. They collect on my writing table in two etched liqueur glasses. 8 more dimes ride on the dashboard of my car with my sunglasses, the lucky ones I found while traveling that never made it back to the liqueur glasses. 20 or so more dimes hide in my coats and suit jackets. I rediscover them when I reach into my pockets while teaching or singing. I've picked these up along the path and have neglected to deposit them in the glasses. But how did it begin? Immediately after my father's funeral, the house was full of cousins, babies, old people, young people. I wondered who would dare to sit in his chair. A lazy boy so thoroughly his that it retained a small oil spot on the upholstery where he rested his head in the end when he was too sick to go out. No one sat in his chair that day. People milled around it, crowded together on the couch, creaked on the folding chairs. The lazy boy remained unoccupied except for a single silver dime that rested in the center of the cushion all afternoon. I never picked it up, but the image of that thin flash of silver against the green upholstery stayed with me. After that, the dimes began to appear. In my tally, I don't include the one I saw that first day or the dozens I saw lying around in the months after my father's death, before I realized that I was finding dimes. At some point, I picked them up and began counting. To be fair, I never pick up the dimes I see around parking meters or in bars or other places where people might be distracted or inebriated or fumbling with their change. Sometimes I see a shiny thing on the ground, I also must confess, and when I reach to pick it up, it's only a bottle cap or a gum wrapper. Sometimes I can go for months without finding one. Then one Christmas Eve day, I'll be feeling especially sad because of all the holiday music, and I'll lose one of my favorite earrings while shopping for last-minute presents. And when I backtrack to Pier 1 and tap on the darkened windows and question the custodial staff who've just swept the floor, and I am told very patiently by these workers who just want to go home to their families that they did not see a delicate silver earring shaped like a leaf with a silver pearl, I will feel disheartened when I go back to my car, which in my haste I've left running in the middle of the parking lot with the headlights on. The snow will be slashing at angles through the headlights as I'm sitting there feeling bad about Christmas when I see something shiny flashing in the parking lot just ahead of me, in the very spot where I had parked hours earlier. And when I get closer, I'll be amazed to discover my lost earring looking pristine and not stomped on or crushed by tires. And then when I bend down to pick it up, I'll see something else shiny below. And when I clear the snow with my gloves, I'll discover, suspended in a thin layer of ice directly below the spot where my earring had landed, one thin dime. One dime found in a plate glass window suspended behind a dusty cardboard poster in the front window of a store where I've just stopped to use the bathroom. Dimes on deserted hallways, trails leading through the woods, dimes in bathrooms, in elevators, under theater chairs, a dime resting on top of my computer tower where there was no dime 10 minutes before, one dime on the silver tray of the checkout counter where I go to buy office supplies. In another store, a woman fumbles with her money, and I wait behind her, artichoke hearts and sun-dried tomatoes in hand. A single coin escapes her change purse, bounces down the counter, coming to a rolling stop at my feet. It's a dime. I stop in the office of my friend. She has a dime sitting on her immaculate desktop. Where'd the dime come from? I ask. Oh, I don't know, she says. I just found it on the floor of the closet. Athens, Greece, 6 a.m. I'm the first one to be picked up by the tour bus that will take me to Delphi, the dwelling place of Apollo, considered by Greeks to be the center of the earth. The bus is spotless, just cleaned. I move from seat to seat, trying to decide what will be the best view. I have so many choices. When I finally settle on my third choice, the 10th row from the front, right side, I put my purse on the floor, and there beside it, oh, come on now, that's just showing off, €1.10 coin. Do the dead ever leave us? Do they watch over us as we sleep? I had a dream about my father several months after he died. He was so frail, lying on a cot in an empty room. His skin was jaundiced. He could barely speak. His small chest rose and fell. I could see that just for him to breathe was an effort. His face was bony as he smiled at me. His teeth were brown and falling out. He had only a few stubborn wisps of hair springing from his scalp. I felt terrible, seeing the state he was in. He was always so careful about his appearance. And now he was disheveled and small enough to hold in my arms. I sat down beside his bed and started to cry. "What's wrong?" he asked in the tender voice I remembered from childhood. "I never came back to see you," I confessed. "When you were sick in the hospital, I never told you that I love you." He took a deep breath and rested his head against the pillow. He waved his hand in dismissal. "Of course you did," he said. His voice was a thin breeze moving through an empty chest. "Of course you did."
That was writer and Iowa Poet Laureate Deb Marquardt with her essay, Dimes. What a lovely way to just stay connected to someone so important in your life.
Well, and it's interesting because it's lovely, but it's a little puzzling to her too. So,
which is
how a lot of things are.
Yeah.
In us. And one thing that we sometimes puzzle about is like, why do we have these things in our lives? You know, what makes them stay here and be part of our lives? And why are we interested in them? And there's so many different things. There's things we like to eat, things we like to read, people that we like to exist with. And we're talking today about our radio service, mm-hmm. which is something that I'm talking to you as a listener. You, a listener, have this radio service is actually an intimate part of your life, coming in through your ears. The way that sound goes into our brain, it's a different kind of connection than the visual knowledge. And that connection is why public radio is important enough to people that they actually contribute money to keep it going. You know, when you could just listen to it, you don't have to contribute money. We know that. But it's an act of enlightened self-interest. It helps it to keep being here. And it's important for it to be here. Your support helps it to do that. And you can express that support right now. We're talking about it. It's our spring membership drive through Friday. You can call this number or text the word donate to this number, 800-359-4145. Or you can just go to praypublic.org on the internet, and it's real easy to do it there, too.
Well, you can take Director of Radio Bill Thomas's word for it, that it is a form of enlightened self-interest, and you will feel better doing it. Or you can find out for yourself by calling or texting the word donate to 800-359-4145 or going online to prairiepublic.org. A show like Main Street Today, as we have had already heard from two wonderful writers. And coming up next, we are going to have another writer and historian, Tom Ezern, one of the regular features on Main Street. These are people who care very deeply about what they are working on, what they're surrounded by, what that matters, and they have this wonderful skill set of being able to take something like history that, you know, a lot of people would just think, oh, snooze fest, you know, but actually the way that Tom can weave together a story and why we still need to be studying history, it's just a beautiful thing. It is available to you on a show like Main Street. You can support that now by calling or texting the word donate to 800-359-4145, or you can also click and join at prairiepublic.org. It just takes a couple of minutes, but it certainly makes a big difference.
And I want to mention that everybody who pledges today during the Main Street hours,
yes,
as well as anybody else, you can just contact us without pledging, is entered in a drawing to win this beautiful book that Ashley was talking with Kent Burkhardsmeyer, the author, photographer, artist of this book, Awareness, Whispers from Nature. And it's a signed copy, and they donated one for us to pass out. You can be part of that, 800-359-4145. prairiepublic.org.
And on kind of a cool spring day, lots of clouds, it is a wonderful time to just curl up with a book or with a public radio. And so we have just been enjoying this wonderful literary theme that we have to today's show. And we are going to round it out with North Dakota State University Distinguished Professor of History, Tom Ezern. He writes a weekly essay for us called Plains Folk. And this week's is The Lay of the Last Longhorn.
Eureka! I found it. Lately, I've been looking into the origins of all the old standard folk songs of the Great Plains, operating with the advantages of digitization, optical character recognition, and the internet. I see all sorts of things that were invisible to the songcatchers of a century ago. So there are a lot of eureka moments when a pristine original text or a savory variant text is exposed to the prairie sunlight for the first time in generations. Like the one I'm looking at now, from Greensburg, Kansas, in 1901, published under the title, The Lay of the Last Longhorn. But I'm getting ahead of my story. The story begins, as best I can tell, in England, sometime before 1850. There, Caroline Norton penned a poem entitled Bingen on the Rhine, sometimes also called A Soldier of the Legion. It begins, A soldier of the Legion lay dying in Algiers. There was lack of woman's nursing. There was dearth of woman's tears. A comrade stood beside him while his life-blood ebbed away and bent with pitying glances to hear what he might say. Mrs. Norton was not a great poet, but she was a popular one in more ways than one. The Irish poet and songwriter Thomas Moore said she was the most distinguished ornament in London society. Norton is well known, too, for her marital difficulties sparked by her alleged affair with Prime Minister Lord Melbourne. She and Mr. Norton, a barrister, became estranged. She lost custody of her children. Finding herself in financial straits, she supported herself with poetic prolificity. Bingen on the Rhine was, so to speak, her greatest hit. It was set to a melody composed by a musician named Judson Joseph Hutchinson, a tenor who is the leader of the Hutchinson Family Singers. The Hutchinson Family Singers were a musical phenomenon popular in their home state of New Hampshire, throughout New England, and across the country. Norton plus Hutchinson added up to 19th century star power. By the grace of the Library of Congress, I learned that Norton's poem surged in popularity in the late years of the century with publication in 1883 of a deluxe folio edition illustrated by no fewer than 6 commissioned artists. It's a beautiful little book, and its appearance coincided with the rise of the open-range cattle industry in the American West, which depended to a good degree on the hardiness of that North African, Spanish, Hispanic beast we know as the Texas Longhorn. By the turn of the 20th century, however, most Americans assumed the Texas Longhorn was on his last legs, like that soldier of the French Foreign Legion who is dying in Algiers, and the American open-range cattle kingdom collapsing like the French Empire in North Africa. I can tell you how Mrs. Norton's poem transformed in the environment of the cattle kingdom became rooted here, but I'll have to do that next week. In the meantime, I'll disclose that the dying soldier in the poem was, in fact, the wayward son of the distinguished bard Thomas Moore. Next week, too, I'll tell you how Mrs. Norton, Bingen, and the Last Longhorn made their way into the literature of North Dakota. Here's a hint. It has to do with our first unofficial poet laureate, James Foley.
Dr. Tom Ezern is a distinguished professor of history at North Dakota State University. Dakota Datebook is next.
Support for Prairie Public is provided by Basin Electric Power Cooperative, headquartered in Bismarck. A Touchstone Energy Cooperative, generating and delivering electricity to over 3 million consumers in 9 states, spanning from the Canadian to Mexican border.
Hi, I'm Jack Russell Weinstein, host of Why, philosophical discussions about everyday life. It seems like every business in the world uses consultants, but do we really know what they do? What makes one better than another, and do they have ethical standards, or are they out there just to make a buck? On our next episode, we'll ask these questions and more. So join me and my guest, Bob Colleran, as we dive into the philosophy of consulting on Why Radio, Sunday at 5 p.m. Central, here on Prairie Public.
Support for Dakota Datebook is provided by Books on Broadway and Dakota Soda and Coffee Company of Williston, featuring coffees and a wide variety of books for children and adults. Books on Broadway, the independent bookstore for independent minds.
This is Dakota Datebook for May 5th. Mail order catalogs are nothing new. They've been a staple of Americana for well over a century. Perhaps the most famous is the Sears catalog. Starting in 1888, Sears Roebuck & Company has sold an amazing array of items, from coal stoves to video games, power tools to ready-to-assemble homes. Yes, homes. For over 30 years, Sears was in the housing business, and it was on this date in 1914 that Mr. and Mrs. Gullickson of Cartwright, North Dakota, ordered their Hazelton model house. For the price of $1,525.37, the Gullicksons bought a home featuring two bedrooms, a parlor, dining room, kitchen, indoor bathroom, and two porches. It even included nails, gutters, and painting materials. It took a while for the house to arrive via train, ferry, and even rowboat, and assembly was required. The Gullicksons were not the only Americans ordering homes from Sears. Some 100,000 houses were sold by the Chicago-based company. Sears entered the housing market in the 1890s by selling the raw building materials. However, the department struggled and was almost shut down until a former manager of the porcelain department thought of retooling the approach. Instead of just selling building materials, Sears started selling entire homes. Selecting from the Sears Modern Homes catalog, customers could pick the house of their dreams and even customize the blueprints. Sears shipped everything the homeowner needed: pre-cut lumber, drywall, shingles, construction plans, nails, and even varnish. The company boasted that the material was of the finest quality, and the prefabrication cut building time by 40%. Furthermore, Sears offered a liberal 5-year financing plan with 6% interest. However, Sears' marketing plan eventually backfired. The homes were at the height of popularity when the Great Depression hit. Sears was left holding $11 million in liquidated mortgages, as homeowners were no longer able to keep up with their payments. The Sears housing department struggled on for another 11 years, until 1940, when Sears shipped its last model home. And although Sears is no longer in the housing business, the Gullickson home and many others are still in use. Today's Dakota Datebook was written by Lane Sunwall. I'm Errol Pepcorn.
Dakota Datebook is produced in cooperation with the State Historical Society of North Dakota, with funding from Humanities North Dakota.
Dakota Datebook, one of the most favorite features on Main Street and across Prairie Public. And if it's not enough to just get it on the radio, why don't you take home a book version? The Dakota Datebook book is available as one of our special thank you gifts during this spring member drive. Call or text the word donate to 800-359-4145 or click and join at prairiepublic.org. The Dakota Datebook book is available at an investment of $20 a month. Obviously, there are lots of Dakota Datebooks out there by now. We have written one for every day of the year for, I don't know, a decade now, I think. It's been longer than that.
Do some repeats of some really good ones, too. So,
right.
But no, we have thousands.
And
of
then
them,
we've culled through those to pick some of the best. So this is like, you know, the best of the Beatles. This is the best. Well, it's not quite that good. But this is the best of Dakota Datebook.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's available with your investment at 1-800-359-4145 or click and join at prairiepublic.org. Director of Radio Bill Thomas in studio with me during this member drive to encourage you to go from a passive listener to an active member. Spring is a good time to become more active,
right. Everything's sprouting up and being green, and you know you don't have to wear a big heavy coat all the time, and you still have to wear a big heavy coat sometimes. But it's spring around
biking
here.
Biking in the
you
morning
know,
is a little tough still.
No, things are going good, and it's great to have people supporting Prairie Public. We come on the air like this because it's a way to reach you, to tell you about the importance of support. Otherwise, you know, we understand. It's not like on the top of your mind of like, oh, I'm listening to this radio station. I should send them some money. So we have to explain that the programming that you get, you know, Dakota Datebook is such a great example of it. We have the NPR shows. with the reporters in Southeast Asia, in Europe, and Eleanor Beardsley in Paris, and people in Africa, in India, and Mexico, and all the big international stories. And then ProPublica also brings you the NPR national reporters and all the great things that are going on around the country. And you hear about what's going on in D.C. and Michigan and Texas and California and Oregon. And
then we have regional news,
and,
too.
Yeah, and then we've got that. And then we've got Dakota Datebook, which is this whole different approach to understanding the world. And they're all different ways of coming at it. And public radio really, it doesn't just stick with like, oh, we're going to give you big political stories or we're just going to be silly all the time. Instead, it's like all different ways of understanding the world here in this radio service. And that's why you're a listener and keep listening to it and listen to Main Street and All Things Considered and all the different shows on Prairie Public, the music and the Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me and all those things. Your support helps pay for that. We got to pay for it. And the lion's share of our income budget comes from listeners like you. You can call or text the word donate to 800-359-4145 or go online to prairiepublic.org.
It's a simple process, but, you know, if you're the kind of person who can sing every single theme song to every single show that you hear and you know things like even the producers of shows, not just the hosts, you are a fan and you can feed your habit. It is a simple process, Bill. Give us the details one last time.
Okay, and remember, everybody's entered in the drawing to win that great book, 800-359-4145 or prairiepublic.org.
We'd like to thank the North Dakota Council on the Arts for supporting arts programming here on Prairie Public.
Nancy Wilson really loves her guitars.
But one time I tried to take my acoustic to bed with me. It just wasn't too cozy that way. So I was like, oh, well, I'll just put him next to the bed and stare at him lovingly.
She used them to play some of rock's greatest songs in the band Heart, and now on her first ever solo album. On the next morning edition from NPR News.
Starting at 4 a.m. Central, right here on Prairie Public.
Just one last little bit of time to remind you that calling or texting the word donate to 800-359-4145 is your opportunity to invest in quality programming and be entered to win a signed copy of Awareness, Whispers from Nature, a beautiful photography and poetry book. Coming up tomorrow on the show, horticulturist Ron Smith is here for Lawn and Garden Questions. We also have Sue Balcom for Main Street Eats as she remembers her mother through her mother's recipe box. That's coming up tomorrow on Main Street. Until then, enjoy the rest of your day.